This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. All those comparisons you hear about how hard it would be to actually spend $1 trillion? Yeah, that, but for the government. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kyle Rizdahl. It is Monday today, the 8th of November. Good, as always, to have you along, everybody. So, $1 trillion, $1 million of stuff in that infrastructure bill that the White House said today President Biden is going to sign just as soon as he can get enough members of Congress to come back to town. Roads and bridges and broadband, basically the kitchen sink in that bill, or more accurately, the water flowing into it. We wanted to dig a little bit deeper, though. So we got Marketplace's Matt Levin to get on the phone with some experts to figure out, A, what exactly is in this thing, and B, how exactly it takes on some of the biggest challenges facing this economy. Item the first, climate change.
This infrastructure bill got a lot of hype. Adi Tomer, who leads the Metropolitan Infrastructure Initiative, says there's a reason for that.
The spending in this package alone is going to rival the infrastructure programs within the New Deal.
And much of that spending is pointed at reducing greenhouse gases. That includes a record $89.9 billion in funding for public transportation.
So we can expect to see smoother travel along older rail lines, station modernizations, and new buses all across the country.
There's also billion-dollar investments in EV charging stations and making the power grid more efficient. Still, Tomer says this money is just a down payment. He says the other infrastructure bill, the one that hasn't passed yet, is a bigger deal for the planet.
$1 trillion is a lot, so we're going to take it piece by piece. More of Matt in a minute. But there is something else that's important to understand about this bill. Because as hard as the legislating was, and we all know it was pretty hard, the next part might be even harder. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore takes a look at just how fast or slow, to be honest, the money might get shoveled out the door and into the things for which it was intended.
As you might expect in a $1 trillion pot of money, there's a lot going on. Let's start with $110 billion for highways and bridges and more than $100 billion for public transit and rail.
At least on the highway side and in the public transportation side of things, I think we're in pretty good shape to move out pretty quickly here.
Dean Franks is with the American Road and Transportation Builders Association. Every state has a backlog of roads and bridges it wants to fix or has been meaning to get around to fixing. Amtrak knows what it's behind on.
We should start to see real-world impacts starting this fiscal year.
But then there's the more complicated, newer stuff. Networks of electric car charging stations, taking down highways that ripped up communities, creating electric bus fleets for cities. Joseph Kane is a fellow at the Brookings Institution.
That could take years, if not, you know, decades to fully realize the true impact.
The buzzword under the Obama stimulus was shovel ready. The emphasis was on getting the money out fast to plug holes in a cratering economy.
Right, the economic moment that we're in is different.
Shoshana Liu is director of Colorado's Department of Transportation and was the Treasury's chief financial officer at the end of the Obama administration.
This bill is more about the future and how we sort of think about what we want, you know, our infrastructure to look like moving forward.
But a lot can go wrong in between the president's pen hitting paper and rubber hitting the road. Robert Puentes is president of the Eno Center for Transportation.
There's a misunderstanding that the federal government and all of its power can wave a wand and that projects can start appearing all over the place. But it's just not how it works. It's so much of this is done outside of Washington.
States and local governments are responsible for 3/4 of all transportation and water spending. So at the end of the day, they will have a lot of say on how quickly, and how well a lot of this money gets spent. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, all right, look, I'll tell you what, new rule. Markets only go up. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, a couple of minutes now about something we mention on the program just about every day, but which I think needs a little bit of extra airtime right now. The bond market, specifically the yield, that is the interest paid on the 10-year Treasury bond. And here's why. Last week, after their most recent meeting, the Federal Reserve announced it's going to start pulling back on the support it's been giving the economy, specifically tapering its big bond buying program, right? We've told you about that. And possibly laying the groundwork for an interest rate increase next year. Possibly. To be clear, Chair Powell said that that was going to depend on what the data says, but bond traders can read the tea leaves as well as anybody else. And there's pretty broad consensus that by next June or so, we might see the first rate hike in what would by then be almost 4 years. But here's the thing. Since the Fed made that taper announcement, and in the process, started people thinking money is going to start getting more expensive, because that's what rising interest rates mean, right? The yield on the benchmark 10-year bond has gone down. What?
The bond market had already priced in largely the tapering announcement. So therefore, the actual announcement rendered it little, if any, kind of price action associated with it.
That's Tiffany Wilding. She's the chief North American economist at PIMCO. And when we got her on the phone, we asked her who is actually leading who in this economy right now? Is the Fed or is it the bond market?
Quite frankly, I think it's a little bit of both.
Because?
Bond markets reflect, and longer term yields in particular, they reflect underlying dynamics in the economy.
Maybe another way to look at it is the bond market ahead of the curve and anticipating inflation will be a bit more of a problem?
Kathy Bajancic's at Oxford Economics.
Well, it's either one, they think this is sort of transitory, but a long period of transitory, or two, they think the Fed's going to tamp down on economic activity and bring inflation down.
The bond market is all about that economic activity, growth, right? And the inflation that it can bring, or not.
So the market is selling you there's going to be higher inflation, is going to be a bit more persistent, but it's not going to be long term.
If given the choice about which one tells you where the economy is going, by the way, at your next dinner party, forget stocks. Listen to bonds. There comes a point in life, sure, of course, but also in business, when you just got to ask, is it worth it? And right now, with the supply chain mess and consumer demand and the resulting price dynamics, by which I mean higher prices, a lot of businesses are asking that question about imports. Shipping costs are up, which means retailers have to pass on those costs to consumers if they want to keep their margins. But consumers, as we have mentioned a time or two on this program, I'm sure, we don't care much for price increases. So their question becomes, are imports even worth it right now? Marketplace's Justin Ho has more.
Porcelain tile from Spain and Italy are the core products for Palmetto Tile Distributors in South Carolina. And unfortunately, all of it has got to pass through the global supply chain.
It's been a little bit of a stressful year.
That's Catherine Reynolds. She's in charge of imports at Palmetto Tile. She says manufacturing is taking longer. Then it can take weeks to find a shipping container, let alone a ship with enough space on it. And once the tile actually makes it to the port of Charleston,
it could be 4 weeks just to get the vessel into the port to be unloaded.
And then once we get into the port to be unloaded, they're completely overwhelmed.
That's when the cost of shipping starts really ramping up. Reynolds is paying port congestion fees, peak season fees. She's paying to store goods in warehouses while she waits for trucks to become available. Reynolds says door-to-door shipping costs for imported tile used to be around $5,000 to $6,000 per container.
Now I'm looking at around $12,000 to $13,000 for everything. So it's gone up quite a bit.
So much, Reynolds says, that she's cutting back on imports.
In particular, a couple of tiles that I want to bring in because I know they'll be phenomenal sellers for our market. I know we'll do well, but I've hesitated. I'm not bringing them in right now because the cost of the particular product is fantastic to import, but the cost of importing, I just can't justify it.
There is some theory behind when businesses can justify importing goods.
Typically, you don't want the cost of shipping, really total logistics costs, to be above 10% of the value of the product.
Dale Rogers is a professor of supply chain management at Arizona State University. He says keeping logistics costs to 10% is difficult now. Rogers says bigger importers, like big box stores, have the scale to do it. Some have even chartered their own ships to bring costs down.
But a small supplier, a small importer, can't afford to do that, and they don't have a lot of choices.
The choices that importers do have depend on the kind of products. Chris Duong is general manager of Hawaii Supermarket, an Asian grocery store near Los Angeles.
I mean, rice is one of those things where you have to have regardless of the price.
Duong says he's had to raise prices on staples like bags of Thai jasmine rice.
So like the 2020 crop, I think the prices were maybe in the high 20s to mid 30s range.
That's for a 50-pound bag.
And now they're in, you know, the $50 range.
Duong also sells a lot of imported alcohol, like French wine and cognac. He says people who want that kind of thing can probably afford to pay the higher prices.
If they're used to spending, you know, $40, $50 on a bottle of alcohol, a $10 increase might not be such a big deal to them.
But there are some products he can't raise prices on, enough to cover the increased cost of shipping. Products like cream crackers, bags of coffee candy, cheap items that probably won't sell if prices rise.
People aren't going to have money in their budget to buy that extra bag of chips or chocolate or candy that they might have if the cost of rice wasn't $10 more a bag.
And so he simply isn't stocking those items anymore. And throughout the store, he's spreading out items he does have in stock to fill the gaps.
We kind of make do with what we have. We make lemonade out of lemons. So that's our job to kind of make the store look good and look stocked.
Duong says Hawaii Supermarket prides itself on the variety of goods it sells. But he considers himself pretty lucky that he has any products at all to sell right now. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Hey, look, here's Matt Levin again on the infrastructure bill. Climate was item one. Those darn supply chains are item two.
The infrastructure bill provides a 40% funding boost to projects that will separate freight trains from highways and other roads.
So that cars and trucks and emergency vehicles, et cetera, do not have to stop.
Elaine Nessel is the executive director of the Coalition for America's Gateways and Trade Corridors. She says beyond saving drivers' sanity, freight trains won't have to slow down so much when traveling through cities. Also disentangling supply chains, $25 billion for airport renovations, some of which could go to temperature-controlled storage facilities.
Anytime that you see fresh flowers in the winter, a lot of times those are coming via air freight.
Valentine's Day is just around the corner.
One more from Matt coming up at the bottom of the program. Coming up.
Of course, I'm not going to change my mind.
Not even a little bit? First, though, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials up 104 points today, nearly 0.3%, closed at 36,432. The NASDAQ picked up 10 points, less than 0.1%, finished at 15,982. The S&P 500 added 4 points, just under 0.1%, 47.1 there. Infrastructure stocks, you try saying that 10 times fast, huh? They were a little built up today. Steel producer Nucor out of Charlotte, North Carolina, heated up 3.6%. Seller of crushed stone, gravel, and sand, Vulcan Materials of Birmingham, Alabama, packed on 4.9%. In touting Caterpillar, the investment firm Baird said the infrastructure package could add to a, quote, strong demand environment. Caterpillar is based up there in Deerfield, Illinois, by the way, scooped up 4% today. Japanese conglomerate SoftBank says its investments lost about $54 billion with a B dollars in value over the past 3 months. The reason for all that trouble? China's crackdown on tech companies such as Alibaba. We've been telling you about that. SoftBank holds nearly a quarter stake in Alibaba. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace. Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We are into week two of the UN's climate meeting in Glasgow, when in theory, with the world's politicians having left, the real work is going to get done. Companies know they have to be on the right side of the work to do something about our warming planet. And there have been, of course, the now standard pledges of climate change plans and net zero emission goals. And those promises almost always include some form of carbon offsets, which in turn usually comes down to planting trees, which gets us to kind of a planetary quandary. Is there even enough land and forest on the globe to do what these targets promise? As Marketplace's Amanda Peacher reports, I don't know.
Carbon offsets are simple enough. When a company emits X tons of CO2, it pays, for example, foresters in Brazil to plant trees that will absorb an equal amount. Now, with so many corporations and government entities making climate pledges, that's a lot of forest. In fact, according to an Oxfam analysis, all those carbon removal goals could need an area 5 times bigger than India.
Yeah, we need another planet.
Forrest Fleischman is a professor of public policy at the University of Minnesota.
There is a limited amount of land that's available for storing more carbon through forestry.
Forests make up the majority of carbon offset projects. Sometimes that means planting new trees, other times paying landowners not to cut down trees. But banking on forests to solve the climate crisis is problematic, says Danny Cullen-Ward with the nonprofit group Carbon Plan.
The problem with storing carbon in trees is they're not necessarily that stable, right?
Recent fires burned several forests that were carbon offset projects in Oregon and California.
Trees die, forests burn.
And when forests burn, those carbon offsets literally go up in smoke. There are new carbon offset schemes that don't rely on forests.
One of the things Bayer is working on is enabling also farmers to offer both carbon offsets and carbon removals.
Matthias Banninger of the German chemical firm Bayer says, in time, offsets could be about much more than trees. He says corporate goals can help spread carbon reduction technologies that work. I'm Amanda Peacher for Marketplace.
We're in something of a hold on the Biden administration's vaccine and testing requirements after a federal appeals court issued a stay of those OSHA rules on Saturday. But a lot of companies have already started acting on those policies or on their own corporate requirements, which means people have already started losing jobs after rejecting the vaccine. And many of them have been unable to get something that usually does come along with a pink slip, weekly unemployment checks. From WPLN in Nashville, Blake Farmer reports.
Healthcare workers are getting the first taste of vaccination enforcement near the Canadian border in Presque Isle, Maine. Nurse Stephanie Grandy was notified in late August that she had until the end of the month to come around to the COVID shot. She told the hospital she had religious objections.
Of course, I'm not going to change my mind, and I was terminated.
She filed for unemployment immediately, and it was approved. But after paying a couple of weeks, she received some mail from the Maine Department of Labor.
Let me grab the letter.
It said, after a review, turns out she didn't qualify for unemployment. In fact, the state asked for its money back, more than $1,000.
I paid my house payment with it, so I don't have the money now.
Grandy and her husband, who's also a nurse and refusing the vaccine, have 7 kids, with 2 still at home and a couple in college. She and a growing number of other vaccine holdouts have turned to GoFundMe campaigns to raise money. Across the country, unemployment benefits are generally off limits. Attorney Michael Green is representing first responders under a vaccine mandate in Hawaii.
If they want to apply for unemployment, the employer is going to come in and say, you know what? We fired them for cause and they get nothing.
Some states, including New York, have been quite explicit that losing a job for resisting the vaccine likely means no jobless benefits, especially in fields like teaching or nursing, where there is a compelling public health interest and other immunizations are already required. But even in New York, unemployment is granted on a case-by-case basis, and the rules are a little different from state to state. That's making a difference right now.
Generally speaking, we look at the terms of the hiring agreement.
Melissa Owens is an assistant administrator of Tennessee's Unemployment Trust Fund. She says her department's policy is that if someone was already hired and then required to take a vaccine, they're entitled to unemployment.
We would consider that a change in the hiring agreement, and there would be no breach by the claimant for failure to comply with that requirement.
Tennessee's legislature passed a law in late October to set this policy in stone. Democratic State Senator Ramesh Akberry represents Memphis and pointed out in a hearing that Republican leaders are being more accommodating to those scared of the vaccine than those who were scared of the virus.
For instance, there were folks who expressed fear of the COVID-19 virus, and they did not wish to go to work because of that. And that was not an exception that we granted to them.
But some GOP lawmakers say they feel differently about the vaccine mandate, and other states are also changing their policies. Iowa's Republican Governor Kim Reynolds just signed a law allowing people who refuse vaccines to collect benefits.
I believe the vaccine is the best defense against COVID-19, but no one should be forced to choose between making a living or standing up for their personal beliefs.
While the broad federal rules are on hold in court, businesses still expect they could eventually take effect. And being unvaccinated in fields like healthcare can make many folks virtually unemployable. Though some health systems are torn, given how short they already are on nurses. At Ballad Health, in a rural region of Tennessee and Virginia, a third of employees still haven't been vaccinated. CEO Alan Levine told a congressional committee some are leaving on their own.
We have started, actually, I have had some resignations already just in anticipation.
With 700 nurse vacancies, Levine says he can't afford a mass firing, not for the unemployment costs, but because of how difficult it will be to find replacements. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
One last item from Matt Levin now on the infrastructure bill and what it might mean for the black and brown and marginalized communities in this economy.
There's about $1 billion in the bill for the Reconnecting Communities Initiative. Alvaro Sanchez is with the Greenlining Institute.
The idea here is to prioritize the movement of people versus the movement on cars and to really connect communities that were once connected until the freeway came.
Think turning that freeway into a pedestrian-friendly boulevard. Still, $1 billion is far less than the $20 billion initially proposed. Sanchez says the bill does put an unprecedented $65 billion towards narrowing the digital divide.
I think we saw during the pandemic how vital of a service broadband access is to everyone.
Especially for lower-income and marginalized communities. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, in which, and honestly, I'm not making this up, maybe you saw it in your social media feeds this weekend, Tesla CEO Elon Musk did a Twitter poll on whether he should sell some of his shares in that company, shares which, it should be said, have made him the richest man in the world. Anyway, Twitter said yes, sell Tesla shares down 4.9% today. Also, it has to be said that Musk is facing a ginormous tax bill because of some options appreciation. So we had to sell a bunch of shares anyway. All right, here's your moment of economic context. Maybe it's because I'm getting on a plane tonight. Destination, by the way, to be revealed tomorrow. 2.1 million people passed through TSA checkpoints. Yesterday, same date in 2019, about 2.3 million. So, you know, close. Our daily production team includes Anais Amin, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, Daisy Palacios, and Minju Park. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.